Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener supported KGNU. Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear how the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Service is increasing the number of hunting licenses for bears this season. But many people are concerned about this and the reasoning behind it. We'll speak with the Professor Emeritus of Wildlife Management from CSU. He's spent 22 years as a professor on this particular issue, but before that he directed a Forest Service research lab in the Pacific Northwest. And he also worked as a chief scientist for the National Biological Service. We'll hear why he's concerned. After that, the Netherlands Public Library has a new oral history project, Ned Speaks. We'll be bringing you these stories on KGNU's Morning Magazine. Today we'll hear from James McVeigh, who's the author of four books. His latest is Bridging Worlds, a Sherpa's story. It's written with Pemba Sherpa. He lives in the mountains west of Netherlands. After that, communities across the Western Slope are coming together while remaining physically distant to help their neighbours. We'll hear about some new pandemic philanthropists in Colorado. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, Frank Dabowski hosts a public affair. This morning, he takes a look at the Boulder Public Library and how it is being impacted by the current pandemic. At 9 o'clock, it is media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news on public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest global headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
A group of Democratic state lawmakers are intent upon introducing a bill that would bring relief to people whose housing status is threatened by unemployment or lost wages during the coronavirus pandemic. However, the Denver Post reports that it does not look like the legislature will enact any kind of freeze on rent or mortgage payments. On May 1st, Governor Jared Polis placed a moratorium on evictions and foreclosures during the month of May. His action included a prohibition on landlords and lenders charging late fees. However, there is no certainty about any relief for tenants and homeowners after May. There are lawmakers who would like to see a freeze, but four of them, including House Speaker Casey Becker, Democrat of Boulder, confirmed that it does not appear they believe the legislature has the power to do so. State Representative Steve Woodrow, a Democrat from Denver, said that about 10 legislators are looking at other solutions, such as enacting some of Governor Polis's orders into law for longer terms. The state legislature has not been in session for about a month and now is scheduled to resume on May 26th. The General Assembly was set to come back in a week, but Democratic leadership announced the extension of the suspension on Saturday. The Colorado Sun reports that when they return, lawmakers will face issues including balancing the state budget while revenues have been dramatically reduced from the economic effects of the pandemic. The legislature must pass a budget by July 1st when the next fiscal year begins. Meanwhile, in Boulder County, the sheriff's office is expecting that a backlog of landlords seeking evictions could flood the system when the moratorium expires. Sheriff's Commander Jim Chamberlain told the Daily Camera that they had numerous evictions scheduled when the moratorium went into effect. Those were put off and will be coming back onto the books. He said that the office gets calls from landlords and tenants almost daily. When court proceedings start back up, the sheriff's office will try to double the number of officers the unit has that handles the evictions. Bruce Weiner of the nonprofit Bridge to Justice, which represents tenants, said that once the stay is lifted, landlords are going to flood the courts with evictions. Governor Polis is scheduled to go to Washington, D.C. to meet with President Trump on Wednesday. The Denver Post reports that the meeting is part of the governor's efforts to seek federal support for the state's pandemic response, including additional testing supplies and personal protective equipment. Polis has repeatedly called on the White House for assistance to ramp up the state's response. The governor has been critical of the lack of testing capacity and accused the Federal Emergency Management Agency of swooping in to buy ventilators his office had been trying to purchase, although a FEMA spokesperson denied that allegation. Polis has also asserted his authority over local facilities, saying on Friday that the state can shut down meatpacking plants where there are outbreaks of the virus, even after an order by Trump requiring that they stay open. The governor said that he wouldn't let the president's order put Colorado's workers' health at risk. The Colorado Sun reports that after reviewing Trump's order, Polis said he believes he has the ability to regulate the places where animals are slaughtered and prepared for sale. The governor was specifically referring to the JBS plant in Greeley, where an outbreak of the coronavirus has sickened 280 workers and killed at least seven. On Sunday, Governor Polis' office said that the opening of a restaurant in Castle Rock was illegal and dangerous. The restaurant, called CNC Coffee and Kitchen, fully opened on Mother's Day, in spite of the governor's order that such places are still closed. A video and photos of the crowd inside attracted national attention and shows few people wearing masks or engaging in social distancing. A Twitter account for the restaurant declared that it was reopening to stand for America, small business, the Constitution, and against the overreach of the governor in Colorado. Authorities have said that restaurants could have their licenses revoked for violating the governor's order. More than a dozen legal and advocacy organizations are urging Governor Polis to substantially reduce prison populations before they become the epicenter of another COVID-19 outbreak. In a letter dated Friday, the organizations, including the ACLU of Colorado and the Lawyers Civil Rights Commission, among others, said that, much like nursing homes, incarcerated people are disproportionately likely to have serious medical conditions that make them vulnerable. Colorado Politics reports that in the last month, the Department of Corrections has released about 1,200 inmates, but nearly 18,500 remain. The letter calls for the governor to commute sentences of certain prisoners aged 55 or older who do not pose a clear risk to the community and have underlying conditions. They are also calling for a moratorium on new prisoner admissions for nonviolent crimes and to speed up parole for those near their eligibility or release dates. A coalition of Denver service providers are ready to open a temporary safe site for up to 100 homeless individuals, even though the city administration has not responded to their plan. Westward reports that the site would have bathrooms, sinks, and even a COVID-19 testing. The site would be an alternative to the large shelters at the National Western Center and the Denver Coliseum. The coalition has been waiting for an answer from Mayor Michael Hancock's administration since they presented it on April 23rd. The coalition had sought financial assistance from the city, but now they say they have enough commitments from donors to fund the entire venture. They also have identified a safe space and are in conversation with landowners. The Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, the Colorado Village Collaborative, are among the members of the coalition. It will be mostly cloudy today with a chance of showers before noon and then thunderstorms and showers this afternoon and this evening. Today's high will be about 61. Tomorrow mostly sunny with a slight chance of showers and a high of 69. It's about 39 right now. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, last week, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Service held some virtual meetings on a proposal to increase the number of bear hunting licenses to be given out this hunting season for Colorado. The bear hunting season begins in September. Now, controlling bear population is one reason that's often given for adjusting the number of hunting licenses that are allowed in the state. And an increase in bear-human interactions is often cited as a need for controlling the bear population. However, many biologists dispute this and are rejecting calls to increase significantly the number of hunting licenses being given in the state. One person who has been vocal on this for many years is Barry Noon. He was a professor at CSU for 22 years. And prior to that, he directed a Forest Service research lab in the Pacific Northwest. He also worked as a chief scientist for the National Biological Service in the Clinton administration. He has devoted his entire professional career to studying wildlife management and particularly this issue around predators.
Let's go back to the bear-human interaction. The interesting thing is here are some of the best studies that have been done on trends in bear-human interaction have been done by CPW researchers. And they have found a number of extremely important things that seem to have been ignored in this bear management plan, specifically that you cannot interpret an increased frequency of bear-human interaction as an increase in bear population numbers. And this is based on detailed studies done in Colorado, one around Aspen, one around Durango, published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature, funded and carried out mostly by CPW researchers based on radio-collared bears. And what happens is during periods of food shortage, which are becoming more and more frequent because of climate change and because of habitat loss due to oil and gas development, bears are moving into ex-urban and urban areas. And those bears are not an increase in population size. So anyone who's interpreting this increase in bear-human interaction as somehow an indicator of an increase in bear population size is simply wrong. CPW's own researchers indicate that it's incorrect. So there's no evidence that bear populations, to my knowledge, are increasing. So the problem has to do is much more systemic. It has to do with declining habitat quality, increasing human population, and exacerbated effects of climate change, which is expressed in drought and lower plant productivity and in a decline in the amount and quality of the bear's natural food sources. And all of this has been well documented and published, not just by CPW researchers, but again, as I've mentioned, by their own researchers. It's amazing to me. They have a lot of very good researchers at CPW. I regularly read their work. It's extremely relevant. But it doesn't seem, when predators are involved, it doesn't seem to be aligned with their policy decisions. It's as if the science is ignored.
The vast majority of people in Colorado aren't hunters, and yet they may not be aware of everything that's happening. I mean, what would you like just general listeners who aren't hunters, who aren't involved in this, to really know about what's happening with wildlife management and through state tax dollars, because this is, you know, a state agency that's making these decisions. You know, what do you think the general public need to know about what's happening right now with wildlife management?
Well, I would say the general public right now is really distracted by the pandemic. And that goes back to something I said earlier. Why choose this particular time to promote such a sweeping policy change for mountain lions and bears? It's the same thing that the Trump administration has been doing in the last 3 months, with phenomenal rollbacks on protections under the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, and in terms of NEPA constraints on oil and gas development on public lands. There seems to be an inappropriateness to it. I don't know, but it makes me suspicious. And, you know, I've already given you lots of bases why this shouldn't go forward. They don't have the data to allow to do it, to set harvest quotas. Even their own researchers have demonstrated that the problem is changing environmental conditions, loss of habitat quality, climate change, and movement of bears into urban environments because there's not adequate food. And the way CPW wants to respond to that is by killing more bears. How does that begin to solve the problem? How does that begin to address their responsibility to all the citizens of Colorado, not the less than 10% that hunt, but the other 90% of us who want to have a full complement of the native wildlife diversity in the state? So here's another thing. And so a few years ago, myself and two of my colleagues at a hearing that then Representative Lebsack called about killing of bears and mountain lions in the Piceance Basin to have more mule deer, where we testified against that and summarized the science. I mentioned in that hearing that the problem is systemic. It's because CPW, like most, if not all, state fish and game agencies, don't get any direct line item funding from the general citizen tax base. They're incredibly dependent on the sale of licenses. And until we have a new funding model for CPW, they're going to default to view as their constituency the less than 10% of Colorado's population that hunts. So that's what really needs to be solved. I'm actually an advocate for increased funding of CPW, and I made that statement during this hearing. So I guess hopefully you will include this in your article, but it probably won't win me many friends at CPW in the upper echelons, because it requires a fundamental change in the funding model, and it requires a fundamental change in philosophy, that wildlife management is not just about deer and elk. It's about all the native species of the state of Colorado.
That is Dr. Barry Noon, a professor emeritus in the Department of Fish, Wildlife and Conservation Biology at CSU. He taught there for 22 years. Before that, he was chief scientist for the National Biological Service under the Clinton administration. Speaking there, critical about the Colorado Parks and Wildlife proposal to increase the number of bear hunting licenses to be giving out this season for the state of Colorado. It is 19 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. The Nederland Public Library has a new oral history project, Ned Speaks, and we're going to be bringing you those stories on KGNU's Morning Magazine. This morning, we'll hear from James McVeigh. He's the author of four books. His latest book is Bridging Worlds, a Sherpa's Story, and that's written with Pemba Sherpa. And James McVeigh lives in the mountains west of Nederland.
Spring comes slowly in the high country. You look for the signs. The first peal of thunder, aspen catkins, a bear track beside the creek. Meanwhile, the daily chores drag on, shoveling snow, splitting wood, refilling the bird feeder, being a good neighbor to the juncos and chickadees, the jays and nuthatches. These days, my companions are fox and moose, hawk and bobcat. The pandemic imposes a different pace. Simple things matter, and small pleasures. A ski through the woods, a glass of Bordeaux by firelight, Telemann's table music overture, and a full moon, Dufu and Lao Tzu before turning out the light. Time to listen, watch, notice, plumb the depths of stillness, in the deep well of memory. Last month, my father died. He was 97, old enough to remember the Roaring Twenties, the Great Depression, and World War II. His father, my grandfather, was a successful businessman in Ohio, acquiring two homes and a dance hall in the 20s, only to lose it all in the Depression. By the time my dad was 8, the family lived in a small lean-to on the side of a 100-year-old farmhouse in western Pennsylvania. Unemployed for 2 years, my grandfather eventually found work as a laborer at an open hearth in a steel mill in Steubenville. When he could, he hitchhiked the 60 miles to the farm in Pennsylvania, walking much of the way. The 60-acre farm was isolated and mostly self-sustaining. There were barns and outbuildings, vegetable gardens and wheat fields, a chicken coop and pigsty, a half dozen cows and two workhorses. There was no refrigeration. If you wanted to keep something, you put it in the cold cellar underground. The work went on every day, tending crops, milking cows, collecting eggs, feeding pigs, cleaning stalls. Area farmers shared a threshing machine, and they'd gather every year for a day at each farm, harvesting wheat, pausing only for a large midday meal prepared that morning by the women. They'd gather again for a day of slaughtering and dressing livestock, chickens, pigs, cows, and calves. The women made sauerkraut and cleaned out the small intestinal tract of pigs for sausage casing. The meat was broken up and stored in the cold cellar. The farm was surrounded by miles of forest where my dad spent a lot of his time, tracking wild animals, watching birds and wildflowers. He knew where to find the best berry patches and springs, where the hickory and walnut and butternut trees grew, where he could lie under a flowering dogwood for hours, listening to a gurgling creek. At 19, he enlisted in the Navy V-12 program, eventually serving as a Seabee, mostly on Guam. Discharged in 1946, he sailed from Hawaii to San Francisco, passing under the Golden Gate Bridge on his 23rd birthday, thinking that it was time he got serious about its life. 70 years later, I sat down with a neighbor, concerned about the fate of the planet, lack of government action, and together we formed a nonprofit designed to meet the basic needs of our mountain community. We would start with food. We named the nonprofit Victory Gardens in honor of the millions of Americans who grew vegetables during World War II. The call to action then was war. Today, it's mass extinction, the climate crisis, and a precarious global economic system. We grow vegetables in Netherlands with the idea of building food security in the mountains. Spring comes slowly in the high country. A warm day of sunshine and there's work to be done. Plant the pollinator garden, seed the starts in the greenhouse, extend the north fence to deter wildlife from walking through the raised beds. Bless the moose. They can walk 30 yards through a vegetable garden and never once step foot on a single plant.
That's James McVeigh, an author who lives in the mountains west of Netherlands, speaking there as part of Ned Speaks, which is a new programme of the Netherlands Public Library, a local oral history project. And we're going to be bringing you those stories on KGNU. You can find out about the nonprofit that James McVeigh talked about there at nedvictorygardens.org. That's nedvictorygardens.org. And McVeigh's latest book is Bridging Worlds, a Sherpa's Story. And that's written with Pemba Sherpa, another extraordinary local man. And you can find out more about his story at sherpachai.com. It is 26 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Well, communities all around Colorado are coming together while remaining physically distant. Up next, we'll hear a report from the Western Slope from our partner station KVNF about a unique program that's starting up during the COVID-19 pandemic to help those in need. Here's Laura Pomisano.
Charlie Quimby and his wife live in Grand Junction. They, like millions of other taxpayers across the U.S., received a one-time stimulus check from the federal government under the CARES Act.
Then we thought, well, that's crazy. We don't need the money, but we didn't know how we could turn it away.
So Quimby and his wife came up with an idea.
And so we thought, well, let's donate it. And then we started thinking, well, how many other people are like us?
By that, he means fellow retirees and people with a stable income.
How could we maybe mobilize those other people to think about doing the same thing?
Quimby then approached the Western Slope Community Foundation, a nonprofit that serves 7 counties in western Colorado.
I went to them knowing that we'd need a fiduciary to accept the money and somebody who was going to be good at helping distribute it to organizations in the region that were doing good work around basic needs that were really needed in the community.
That's how the West Slope Cares program started. So far, over $38,000 have been raised. Kristen Lynch is the Director of Development and Major Gifts for the Community Foundation. She says the foundation earmarks donations to the program for area nonprofits that help individuals meet basic needs such as food, shelter, and safety.
Right now, a lot of these organizations can't take tangible goods. They can't take in food. They can't take in blankets and those kind of things because of the virus. So a lot of these organizations are needing money. That's what they're needing more than anything. And so this is a way you can help.
In Lake City, a town of about 400 people, locals have donated $2,500 to the food pantry. Tara Hardy, the director of public health for Hinsdale County, says they've used the funds to start a grocery store voucher program.
People can go in and get some supplies and shop locally. It also helped promote what our local grocery stores are doing. It reduced the need to travel outside of the county. We felt like it was a win-win for everybody.
Hardy says a $500 donation helped a local grocery store start a senior lunch program.
Through Get Some Groceries, the seniors can have a sack lunch if they just contact the store and they can get a free sack lunch.
Hardy says the generosity of locals during this pandemic is a testament of how Lake City residents support each other.
I'm always amazed at when tragedy hits or hardships hit our community, how everybody comes together and wants to just reach out as much as they can. I think it's one of the things that attracts so many people to live in our community.
Across the San Juan Mountains in the town of Ridgeway, a restaurant voucher program is now underway. It's called Support Your Neighbor. It works like this. People can buy a voucher from a local restaurant, then give it to someone they know, or it will be donated. The vouchers allow people to buy a meal from the restaurant where it was purchased. Back at his home in Grand Junction, Charlie Quimby says the main idea is for people to give what they can in order to support their community. It can be monetary or even a kind word to a stranger.
It's what your circumstances allow, what's in your heart to do.
I'm Laura Palmisano.
And you can find all of our coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic online at kgnu.org, right at the top of the homepage. There's a few links that will get you to our dedicated news blog, but also to the specific places that we are updating the information on COVID-19 pandemic and the local restrictions and all of the things that are changing. Also, many links to resources as well to help you navigate what's happening.